You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
When you arrive at a mainline seminary, one of the first things you learn is the importance of context. So to get started, you study the history of the ancient Near East. And wow, what I didn't know. The ancient stories of the Jewish people aren't dry as dust history, but rich and complex dramas with intrigues and double crosses and power plays that make today's political intrigues seem tame. And considering how long a history that it is, it really helps put the ego of our 250-year-old toddler country into perspective. So, knowing the historic context not only helps the Bible make more sense, it's an exercise in humility. Our passage today is from the prophet Micah. Probably less known today than prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah, he's still got some greatest hits, including one of my favorite passages, that all the Lord requires is for us to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. Micah comes from a turbulent time in the history of the Jews, who, in the biblical telling, have already cracked up into two different kingdoms. Lots of fear and unrest in the southern kingdom, Judah, and internal rebellions in the northern kingdom, Israel. Micah lived in and served as a prophet to the southern kingdom of Judah. He was active during the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel and the Assyrian attack on Jerusalem around 750 years before Jesus' birth. Why all the unrest and internal conflict? Well, speaking for God, Micah makes it pretty clear. The problem is the oppression of the weak by the upper classes, the powerful and wealthy elites, especially the politicians and priests. Good thing nothing like that would ever happen today. Micah warns them that unless things change, there will be severe retribution. They don't change, and so enter God's instrument of judgment, the apex superpower of the time, Assyria. Jerusalem's king, Hezekiah, was playing a dangerous game of juggling his overseers, the Assyrians, off the Egyptians. And in a reprisal against Hezekiah's flirtations with Egyptian influence, the Assyrians descended with a vengeance and not only crushed the Jews, but wiped out Hezekiah's Egyptian allies. Both kingdoms, Israel and Judah, were eventually destroyed. And Jerusalem survived only by paying huge sums of tribute tax. So, plop in the middle of virtual total annihilation and Micah's oracles of, I told you so, comes our passage for today. Micah essentially throws the people a bone, predicting salvation for a remnant of the people, along with the promise of a new ruler who, like David before, would come from Bethlehem, the smallest, good-for-nothing little nowhere anything could possibly think of. Early Christian writers, most famously the authors of Matthew and Luke, picked up on this prediction, and while Micah was never talking about Jesus, Matthew and Luke nevertheless applied Micah's prophecy to add credibility to their Jesus stories. And voila, Micah ends up in the Christmas stories.
Our words of wisdom are from Micah, chapter 5, verses 2 through 5. But you, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, who are one of the little tribes of Judah, from you shall come forth for me, one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin is of old, from the ancient days.
Therefore, he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has brought forth. Then the rest of his kindred shall return to the people of Israel.
And he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they shall live secure, for now he shall be great, to the ends of the earth, and he shall be the one of peace. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
The average American dedicates 30% of leisure time to perusing the web. 61% admit to being addicted to the internet and their devices. 67% of cell phone owners find themselves checking their device even when it's not ringing or vibrating. The average employee checks 40 websites a day, switching activities 37 times an hour, changing tasks every 2 minutes. However, only 2% of people can actually multitask without a decline in performance. 33% of people admit to hiding from family and friends to check social media. Unplugging for just 1 day can give some users mental and physical withdrawal symptoms. We are so connected that we're disconnected. Because we have GPS, we don't need to ask for directions anymore. Because we can Google answers to just about anything, we don't discuss different opinions or ideas with colleagues and friends. We don't ask the handy neighbor next door for help. We just pull up a YouTube how-to video. We can roam the whole world virtually. We have access to nearly endless information. And our devices have access to nearly endless information about us. Have you ever done an internet search for something and 4.7 nanoseconds later, all the ads in your browser are for variations of that item you were just shopping for? Our devices are spying on us. It's not a conspiracy theory. Our phones actually are listening to us, even when they're off and in our pocket or purse. With Alexa or Siri, all we have to do is speak to turn on music, research libraries of information, or order toilet paper. Stat! My browser evidently knows that I listen to a lot of Steely Dan because my newsfeed algorithm keeps serving me obscure news stories about the band. And Neuralink, Elon Musk's brain implant startup, could shift to human trials in 2022. I don't know if you've seen the video of a monkey with a Neuralink implant playing a video game on a screen with just its mind. But Elon is ready to start implanting similar devices in human beings very soon, paving the way for a lot of what is currently on our phones to be transferred to a chip in our brains. Do we really need to be that connected? Remember, it wasn't that long ago that most people couldn't imagine needing a cell phone. Now, we can't be without one. But let's be honest. It's not a question of whether we can choose to be connected or not. The pandemic has proven that we are inextricably connected to one another across the globe. So the question isn't whether we're going to be connected or not. It's the quality of that connection. Brené Brown says, "We're hardwired for connection. There's no arguing with the bioscience, but we can want it so badly that we're trying to hotwire it. Our devices and the internet are only too happy to oblige. They may make us feel connected, but the connection they provide is more often than not superficial and fleeting. And in the long run, it drives a deep disconnect from one another. So, as we long for connection, it's good to note that every year when Christmas rolls around, a peculiar word usually comes up that's all about connection. And that word is incarnation, essentially describing how in our Christian tradition, the divine established a totally new kind of connection with humanity. How? The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Ah, Jesus. The Word, incarnation, incarne, literally means with flesh, with meat, like chili con carne. So the incarnation basically describes Jesus as the sacred, but with meat, in person, in the flesh. In other words, connection. So as followers of Jesus, seeking to emulate Jesus' teachings in life, we're called to put some flesh on all the talk and make connections, which is another reason the last 2 years have been so frustrating. Quarantines, lockdowns, and social distancing have not only left us longing for the kind of connection we're used to, but has left us scrambling as to how to follow through on our part in this whole incarnation thing. But one thing is becoming clear. No matter how much we want things to be the way they used to be, they're never going back. The good news is they're going to be better. Why? Because it's in moments like these that we're forced to figure out what's really important, what's really real, and adjust accordingly. Mike Iaconelli used to say, "The way of the spiritual life begins where we are now, in the mess of our lives." And guess what? We've been dealt a whole heaping helping of mess. Think about the people Micah was speaking to. Everything they'd ever known had come crashing down around their ears. And yet there was the promise of something completely new growing out of that mess. From where? Bethlehem. Are you kidding me? That's nowhere. Nothing. Totally disconnected. Yeah. And it's here that the change begins. On the fringes, on the outskirts, the product of a crisis that forces change. Look, I have my bouts with Zoom fatigue, just like you. I get it when people deride all the new means of connection as somehow not as good as being in the flesh. But I also have so many experiences over the last couple of years where our forced adjustment to Zoom has led to the total transformation of otherwise staid or distant events. I got to attend a graduation ceremony at Wharton, where my niece received an award and special recognition. Would I have been there without the pandemic? Probably not. I've officiated at memorial services and weddings where people from all over the world have been able to attend virtually who would have otherwise never been able to have made the trip. And of course, our studio celebrations on Sunday mornings reach hundreds and hundreds of people, way more people than those in attendance in person. And if you want a glimpse into what the future is really going to look like, here's a statistic to take note of. The most recent polling indicates that fully 50% of people prefer to communicate digitally rather than in person. 50%! So here we are. We're hyper-connected with and through all our devices. We're slowly making our way into a more virtual future, and we're exploring deeper connections in new and creative ways. We need to redefine what in the flesh means. Instead of bemoaning the passing of well-worn familiar ruts, it's time to embrace the new possibilities. I, for one, am grateful for the connections I've made, not just despite the pandemic, but as a pandemic bonus. The means by which we make the connections we are longing for are evolving right before our eyes. Our challenge is to not be seduced into rushing back to the way things used to be, but to stay alert to the opportunities we have to deeply and vitally connect with one another in ways that are only now being revealed to us. St. Augustine reminds us, "Since you cannot do good to all, you are to pay special attention to those who, by the accidents of time or place or circumstances, are brought into closer connection with you. Pay special attention to those who, by accidents of time, place, or, pandemic, are brought into closer connection with you. We long for connection, for incarnation, with one another, with a broader life purpose, with a sense of the transcendent. But truth be told, the connections we long for are all around us, in all sorts of formats, and by means the likes of which would have been unimaginable only a couple of years ago. Micah's little town of Bethlehem is a reminder that it's often in the most unexpected, unplanned, ridiculed, suspect, and messed up places in life where hope can often get previously unimagined and renewing footholds. The means by which we experience the connections we're longing for are transforming right before our eyes. Let's not rush to get back to the way things used to be. There's a whole new world of connections on the horizon. Going forward, incarnation may not look like what we're accustomed to, but don't you worry. The Spirit is still at work, working to connect us in vital and creative new ways. Keep longing.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.